Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahinte.
You and me got the best seat in the house to listen to these guys tell us about the most pressurized moments in sports.
Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
And a good Monday morning. It is ESPN Radio. New York kind of takes it over a little bit this week. Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott. Until next Monday, 6 o'clock Eastern, Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin. Bart Scott, good morning across the nation to you. How you doing, buddy?
Across the city. What's going on, man? It's crazy. We're just holding the fort down to the main crew come through. It's a New York version of Golic and Ringo? No. What are we calling this?
I think we're in between, right? We're kind of the placeholder. It was Golic and Wingo, and now, listen, let's own it. Let's say it's Rothenberg and Scott for the week. Let's own the show.
We're Bridges. We can call ourselves the Bridges.
That's right. This is the Verrazano version. Dave Rothenberg, Bart Scott, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers, of course. All right. So we have a lot. To get into. Want to let you know, of course, new morning show starts a week from today. Keyshawn, Jay Will, Zubin, ESPN Radio, presented, of course, by Progressive Insurance. All guests. We have a lot. Bart, guess how many guests we have today, all of which will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. I want you just to take a wild, random guess at how many we have.
I'm going to go 7.
You'd be over. You would win neither showcase, okay? But you'd be very close. The answer, in fact, is 6. ESPN Radio, as I said, presented by Progressive Insurance. Here's our guest list today, and it's good. It's not like we got these guests. You're like, oh, come on, Rothenberg. Really, we got to talk to this person? No. You're going to like this part. Eduardo Perez, 6:30. Dan Orlovsky, 7:15. Heather Dinich, 7:30. Ryan McGee, 8 o'clock. Jesse Rogers, 8:30. Mark Jackson, 9:10. Now, if you miss any of those guests, you can listen to all 4 hours on demand in the ESPN app. All right, Bart. Listen, man, I'm very worried. Finding out this weekend, MAC college football completely canceled. Bart, we're at the point now, I think you have to be very, very concerned. We'll probably find out more later today as the commissioners of the Power Five conferences meet. We have to be very concerned at this point that we're going to have college football this year, don't we?
I'm very concerned because you have to understand that these are supposed to be student athletes. And if they're student athletes and it's no students on campus because they're doing virtual learning, how can you justify then having, you know, amateur athletes playing because it's good for the school, it's good for business? And, you know, that's the fine line that they're going to have to try and walk. Because you saw what happened just with what happened at the Georgia school in high school with kids testing positive after that picture came and went mainstream of the student taking a picture of how crowded things were. You know, so it's one of those things where I think they open up Pandora's box if they decide to say, okay, we're going to play football, then now you're saying these guys are essential. They're professionals and not amateur. And then that's going to open up everything from all the way back from the O'Bannons, all the way back from Northwestern. You know, you see some of the things taking place as far as, you know, owning your likeness and things of that sort. So I tell you what, man, this is a very slippery slope. But we understand the Power Five conferences is big money makers. You see the MAC dropping out because maybe not as much money there. We saw, you know, the Ivy League say, hey, we're not going to have sports. And if that happens, how does that affect the landscape of professional sports? Because we know that college is the feeder system. We've seen other athletes already opt out. We've seen a crazy amount of professional athletes opt out. So if they're opting out for health concerns, how does that then affect the college ranks, which then affects the high school ranks? Because then you get into scholarships and carrying more scholarships if seniors want to get that year back, and it can create an entire mess.
The whole thing, right? The whole thing starts to at least seemingly crumble for this 1 year, and I think that has to be the big concern. But here's my question. From the flip side, and I know money is a huge, huge issue, Bart, but God forbid something happens. And statistically, I mean, you know, and there's the naysayers, this isn't really that bad, and it's the flu and whatever. I don't even want to get into that conversation. I think it's kind of asinine. But here's the point, okay? Statistically, if you have 1% or whatever the number is of people that get sick that wind up getting really, really sick, or God forbid someone does perish right from this thing, then what happens? Like, if you're college football and something like that were to eventually happen, what do you do? Like, you now set yourself up for, and I know that you don't want to talk about lawsuits, but I think you have to bring that into the equation a little bit. You're going to set yourself up for the biggest lawsuit in the history of sports. You put someone out there in a situation that they probably shouldn't have been out there with. So Yeah, I don't know what happens here. And again, I think we're all very, very worried today. This could be a very dark day for sports.
And then you had the reports of the Colorado State telling, you know, encouraging student athletes not to report symptoms and things of that sort. And we understand you talk about 1%. So let's just say three people pass or something. I believe it's like, what, 300,000 student athletes or something crazy like that. Or not 300,000, but, you know, it's thousands of students. You think about how does that in turn also affect the other sports? Because do we think we're going to have a vaccine before basketball is slated to start? You know, so it's like one of those things where I think, you know, the powers that be are really going to have to take a look at themselves, because we can't have a Corey Stringer type of situation. You know, you have the other things that happens on a normal basis. You worry about heat strokes and you worry about other illnesses. And you talk about having these athletes, over 100 of them, in tight quarters. You talk about older assistants. It's so many things that they're really going to have to really, you know, decide, you know, how they're going to proceed and get procedures in place. And if I'm a parent, it's no way that I'm going to put my son at risk. You talk about maybe on a team, maybe you, in any given year, you might have 9 players that go. That's 10% of the team, you know, and that's a great year. You know, why would I risk my son's life when he's just there to get an education and use football as an opportunity to get a free one?
But I think a lot of people, and I think here's the disconnect, and this is what gets the country so crazy, is a lot of people do not see it as risking someone's life, right? The common theme is if you're healthy and you're young, nothing's going to wind up happening to you. And I think a lot of parents are probably, I'll be honest with you, I think uneducated. And I think a lot of the parents of college football players may be uneducated and say, I want my kid to play. I agree with you. If I had a kid right now and he's playing major college football, there's no way he's playing this season. And you say the same thing. But I don't know that that holds true. And you now see a stance of the college football players, Bart, coming out, like Trevor Lawrence coming out and saying, it's safer for us to play. Like, they're going to have this avenue of, it's better for us to play than to not play. This is what we need as college athletes. And I don't know that that's the right tack to take. I don't know that it's wrong. I don't know what the right or wrong is at this point.
Well, not to be funny, but he's a young man and he's naive to real life, I believe. He's a young man. He's doing what athletes do. I mean, hell, his coach was saying, we storm Normie. He was saying this virus and America's great and all that stuff. That's great until it's your kid that loses his life. Or it's great when you're, you know, we don't even know what the long-term effects are. And you talk about signing a waiver. You know, in the NFL, if you have an injury that occurs, you know, it becomes a workers' comp case, right? And no matter what happens, if that injury was logged, you're able to be able to get, you know, healthcare, get, you know, services at the cost of the NFL, right? If what happens, you know, 30 years down the line when you're 20 years old, you know, you have scarring of the lungs and something comes back. We always talk about chicken pox, right? And we talk about how shingles can become something that comes out. The virus lives in you forever. We don't know. So why put kids at risk until we know, have more facts? Yeah, you know, I always jack his name up. But Eduardo Rodriguez,
right, from the Boston,
you know,
Red Sox.
For the Boston Red Sox, I would say that he's young, prime, in condition, you know, is eating right, has nutrition trainers, professional athlete. Now he has an enlarged heart. Like, we don't know. You know, a lot of college athletes have undiagnosed, you know, they have undiagnosed ailments that we have no idea that they have. So if that's the case, you know, you don't want to discover that and see what can potentially be, you know, some of the underlying conditions that they have yet to discover. You know, I played with Santonio Holmes. We heard about Ryan Clark and him not being able to go to Denver because he figured out that he had the
sickle cell trait.
So did Santonio Holmes. You know, do we really want to discover this? Out of all those kids, do we really know that we know everything about every athlete that we have? You know, and what a tragedy that would be. And then what happens is, if you decide to push it to the spring because you think, okay, maybe we're going to have a vaccine or, you know, better therapeutics by spring, then how does that affect the outgoing seniors? And listen, this is going to be a year that sports is just going to be weird and different, and we're going to have to try and figure out how to get it. But I think trying to force feed, you know, college athletics, because it's one thing to make a decision and you're the person that's signing off on it yourself. It's another thing when your parents have to sign a waiver and put that type of pressure on a parent to make a decision because they're saying, hey, well, this is my way out, and I need and this is the family business now to try and make all our lives better, and God forbid something tragic happens.
I mean, it is wild. And really, and let's be fair, Bart, and we'll get to it as we move forward here this morning, it is unforeseen. I mean, we, for all the things that we've dealt with in the history of sports and analyzed, there's no way that we thought on August 10th, 2020, you and I would be sitting here discussing the potential postponement of college football. What would the postponement of college football mean for the NFL? We'll get to that.
Hello. Keyshawn Johnson, Jay Williams, and Zubin Mahente. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
It is Dave Rothenberg. It is Bart Scott, ESPN Radio, ESPN app. Bart, we got so much going on. Sports is back, and the Houston Astros story never, ever, ever, ever goes away. And let's bring in Eduardo Perez to help us break down what's going on in the world of Major League Baseball. ESPN MLB analyst Eduardo Perez joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oil is made up from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on the Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. All right, that's a mouthful. Eduardo, we welcome you this morning on a Monday morning. It's Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Dave. Hey, Bart. How you guys doing? I hope you guys are doing as well as I am.
We're doing well. We're doing a whole lot better than the Houston Astros, it seems like. Eduardo, I'm surprised that these things are actually coming to physical confrontations. Are you surprised? Not that things are happening. I think we all expected that. Are you surprised we're seeing physical confrontations in baseball the way, we're not supposed to see them this day and age with COVID going on?
No doubt. No doubt. It caught me by surprise. I think the players should already know. Players, coaches should already know, especially with the conditions that they're living through right now, and that they have to do via travel, clubhouse, separation. It's a different game. It's a different game. It's a different environment. And to see that yesterday just goes to show that just some uniformed personnel, player, coaches, could just see red and forget about the rest, and that it's going to be real to see what Chris Young, who is in charge now of all the disciplining in baseball, what he decides on once he reviews all the video moving forward. But we already saw from what he had done with Joe Kelly earlier on this year against the Houston Astros how heavy he had on him. This will be. I believe heavier than those A-game suspensions that he had given Joe Kelly.
For the Astros, we thought that they were going to get a pass because they were only going to have to deal with all the rhetoric coming from the stands because we didn't have any stands. But it seems like the players are more livid and more upset than we thought. And then how do you really police it when you don't know really how it really started, because you had banter coming back and forth from the dugout and, you know, and back on the field?
Well, I'll tell you this. I don't think any of this incident and had to do with the past of what the Astros had done in 2017 or anything like that. I think this is something that, without the fans, as a matter of fact, you could hear clearly what's going on the field from the dugout, voices coming in. We've seen already some teams sometimes be upset if it's by the chirping of other teams and the cheering of other teams from the dugout that they start hearing things. We saw some discussions with Tampa Bay and the Yankees this past weekend also, but nothing escalated. Now, this here is with Ramon Laureano having been hit three times in the series, twice by Castellanos. Oh, by the way, a pitcher that pitched only a handful of games in AAA last year. He was on the travel squad for the Houston Astros, and because of the injuries that they've had in this last travel, he was able to make the big league roster. So, in essence, this is his third big league outing, and you can't expect a lot out of pitchers that have not faced live hitting at all in a competitive nature, especially one of like Castellanos coming in and hitting Laureano with a curveball. I get it that he was hit earlier by a fastball at 91 miles per hour. He was hit a couple days before that by Castellanos at an 88 mile per hour pitch. But Laureano has no right there of just looking at the pitcher and start letting him know how to throw and how to grip a baseball. And I think that's what the Houston Astros took offense to. But it's going to be, again, Chris Young's going to – this is going to be some kind of penalty, I think, that's going to be installed maybe with the Houston Astros coach and Laureano moving forward. And I'm interested to see where this is going to go.
So, Eduardo Perez with us here, ESPN Radio. Let me just ask you this,
right.
and maybe I'm jumping to a conclusion I shouldn't be, but it sounds like you're saying right. You think this was unintentional, Eduardo. Do you think so? Do you think that hitting the same guy three times over the weekend was unintentional?
No doubt. And it sounds as crazy as it does. Yes, it does. Bob Ronald's been hit already this year five times. All right, I get that. The Oakland Athletics were hit in the series quite a few times in general, not only Laureano. It was a breaking ball. It was a 3-2 pitch. It was a curveball. He had taken a really good at bat. The time before, there was a runner at first. It was also a young pitcher on the mound. And let's not forget the Houston Astros, because they've been decimated with so many injuries, Dusty Baker has been forced to use pitchers that aren't big league ready. They're just not big league ready. And they might not even be game ready because they were on the travel squad moving forward. And that being said, it's, you know, yes, they're wearing big league uniform, but in a regular circumstance, most likely Castellanos is in double A, possibly triple A this year. That part we don't know, but what I do know is that big league ready, they are not. And again, this was not done on purpose. If you're going to hit a guy on purpose, you're going to do it on the first pitch, or you're going to set him up with a pitch away and then come hard in to be able to do that. Ramon Laureano jumped the gun a little bit here. He was a little frustrated because he had been hit a few times, and I get it in the competitive nature as a player. Where the Houston Astros went wrong was on the chirping side, especially a coach that's supposed to calm the dugout, not agitate the situation. And again, because that happened right there, Alex Cintron could be looking at a pretty hefty either fine or suspension.
Much like the steroid era, we don't know how much the the operation that the Houston Astros really had as far as being able to signal things to batters. Altuve looks like he's struggling right now. If this continues, what would the narrative be about, the scandal?
Well, depends where you are. If you're in Houston, or if you're in the West Coast, or you're all over baseball, because what everybody wants to say is Jose Altuve, the only reason he hit is because he now does not know what's coming. And I can tell you, as a coach in 2013, Jose Altuve can hit. He can hit when he knows or when he doesn't know what's coming. But I will say this. Jose Altuve was one guy that did not like, at least in 2013 when I was there. Nobody has to tell me this because I witnessed it myself. He's a guy that did not like to know what was coming back then. And usually players that don't like to know what's coming early on in their careers, they don't like to know what's coming later on in his career. He's instinctive. This guy swims at a lot of pitches. Everybody accuses him if it was because of the Chapman incident with the buzzer, which Major League Baseball did not find anything wrong with that. After all the investigation, it wasn't a really good pitch to begin with. It was a hanging slider. And those are the pitches that he hits, pitches up in the zone. He rakes them. I'm not defending Jose Altuve in any which way. The narrative is going to be where you're located. If you're from L.A., you're going to say, well, this is why the Houston Astros won. If you're from Boston, this is why the Houston Astros beat us. If you're from New York, the same thing. If you're from Houston, you're going to say, well, it's because they're putting pressure on themselves, trying to do a little too much. But at the end of the day, I remember Ruben's era always telling us, always saying, hey, the water will always go back and reach to its level, meaning the sea. We'll find out in the next few weeks if this will continue. But I know it's a grind right now for those guys. And are they pushing? Are they pressing too much? I believe right now they are. Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, those are two guys that need to start swinging the bat in order for the Houston Astros to be able to contend in that American League West.
I'm glad you brought New York up, because it seemed like New York, like the Yankees was going to run away with it, like they would never lose a game and Judge would never strike out. Now they're starting to level out a little bit. With that being said, it seems like it's going to be one of these instances during the trade deadline where it's going to be a lot of teams that's going to believe that they're in it that may not really be in it. Could be fool's gold. How do you think that's going to affect maybe the trade deadline and maybe some players being moved?
Oh, we knew this was going to happen early on, and that's the part that's going to be interesting, is our general managers are willing to make moves knowing that there are still teams that are close enough. Look, early on in the year, we've seen situations already. The St. Louis Cardinals have only played five games. You got the Miami Marlins won so many games in a row. At one point, they were 7-1. They're 7-3 now. So you're wondering, you know, this is a team that we thought was going to be out, and now all of a sudden, because they had to tie in and make a few last minute moves because of the COVID situation, you could say right now, look, they're in first place. They're in. Are they going to be there at the end of the month? That's the big question. It comes down to the New York Yankees. Now down Giancarlo Stanton because of a hamstring issue. Are they going to need, if it's more pitching because one of their guys is already down to Tommy John, or is it going to be the Boston Red Sox as sellers this year? That's one part that's going to be interesting also. With Chaim Bloom there as the general manager, the Boston Red Sox, who are never really, rarely sellers, this year could be the year for them to be able to do that, but they're starting to play a little bit better baseball. Is it going to be fool's gold, as you said, in August 31st? Those are the big questions that remain to be seen. You look at the Kansas City Royals. They've been playing great baseball, and they came in and they told the Minnesota Twins, look, we have young potential star pitching in the near future, and this was a glimpse of what we can do. If they continue to play well for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, are they going to be buyers instead of sellers? I think the word fool's gold used it correctly, but I think it goes for the majority of the teams except a few, namely the Pittsburgh Pirates, who should be sellers in this market.
Eduardo Perez joins us here on ESPN Radio, Rothenberg and Scott on a Monday morning. All right, last one for me. You mentioned the Cardinals. They're 2-3. Eduardo, you have teams that have played 16, 17 games. This team has played five. They're postponed already for the first series this week. Are we at the point where they're not going to be able to play 60 games and you're going to turn this into a winning percentage fiasco if you're MLB?
Man, it's crazy. You imagine having to play 55 games, I'm not mistaken, in 47 days? That's craziness. And again, they're not going to be able to do that, that's for sure. So the win percentage is going to have to be used just like it was in 1981. And which was another strike here, and you're going to have to go with the win percentage. Now you're going to have to take care of the players as far as safety. Baseball, 2 weeks off. They've only practiced twice in that time. I'm concerned with all the injuries that's going on all around baseball. I'm concerned with the veteran players, especially because those look like are the ones that are going down with soft tissue injuries. We saw Charlie Morton go down. We've seen Scherzer go down, on and on when it comes to the veteran guys. And those are the guys that I'm concerned about, at least on the mound, Adam Wainwright being one of them. So it's just really interesting to see what Major League Baseball will do, what the St. Louis Cardinals organization will do also to protect the health of their players moving forward. Major League Baseball has done a great job as far as making sure that no other team gets in that cardinal circle right now as far as with the COVID situation, but they also have to take care of those players right now who have tested positive or who have not, and then you just can't throw them out there with 2 weeks off completely. We're in grounds that we have never seen before, and we really don't know how many games at the end they will play, but if they can at least play 50 games, I think it's going to be a win-win for the St. Louis Cardinals.
All right, Eduardo, listen, we appreciate
it. I had more. I had so much more.
This is not New York radio, Bart. We just can go on forever. There's hard outs. There's things to do. Can you? Let me ask you this. Can you make it quick? Can you give him one more really quick question?
if he would bless us with one more answer.
All right, Eduardo, quick answer too. You got to play the game also.
Now, what kind of hit do you think that Cespedes' reputation takes, and what's his future in baseball after he opted out? And then the TMZ reports come out that he was salsa dancing, and he was saying that he was concerned with the virus.
Well, I'll make it quick. I think if Cespedes proves that he's healthy for next year, as he's going to be a free agent, I think his chances, because his bat still works in the league, I think his chances are going to be good. Now, is it going to be a guaranteed deal? He's going to have to come in a minor league deal and prove that he's healthy, prove that he can hit. And I think any of the other 29 organizations, as a matter of fact, including the New York Mets, might consider a Yoan Cespedes in the future.
All right. Bart, you got any more? Can we move on from Eduardo?
I'll call him later.
All right. Eduardo, thanks, man. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Good stuff. Eduardo Perez.
Keyshawn Johnson. Jay Williams, he got it. And Zubin Mahente.
We are back on SportsCenter. ESPN reported.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
And that's courtesy on RJN, Arizona Sports 95.7. Good Monday morning to you and to yours, Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott. We're New Yorkers, and we have taken over the ESPN airwaves. I got to tell you, Bart, I thought the first hour was sensational, and I'm not just saying that because I was involved. I thought it was a very good hour of radio.
Oh, we're just getting warmed up. We're going to make the next three even better.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have a lot of guests. I want you to strap in because we have a lot of guests coming up.
Oh, man, I need bios.
You want me to tell you who's coming? Eduardo Perez was already terrific. Dan Orlovsky joins us in 14 minutes from right now. Heather Dinich, 29 minutes. See, nice. This is like the radio pro coming out in me. I'll give you just the amount of minutes till they join us. Ryan McGee, you think I could do it all the way through? 59 minutes from right now.
Nice.
Jesse Rogers, 89 minutes from right now, also known as 8:30 Eastern. And Mark Jackson, we talked Knicks earlier for a couple of minutes. Mark Jackson will join us at 9:10. All right, if you miss any of those guests, you can listen to all 4 hours on demand in the ESPN app. We're holding down the fort this week. Next week, I got to be honest, it might be bigger than us. It's the debut of the big show, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. And I know, Bart, you will be locked in to that. That's just 1 week from today. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We mentioned it before, and I'd like to incorporate some calls into this. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. People say, well, what are you going to get into? We had a heated debate during the break, because the conversation never stops when we go to break. We just continue. We are sports people. And the conversation was this. And I thought it got heated. And because he's an Eagles fan, I thought Cliff was completely out of line with some of the things he was saying. But my point is this. Best players under 25 years old. I'm going to give you a couple guys, Bart. You tell me who you would take 1, 2, and 3. You ready?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to give you 10. You go 1. Go. For suspense, go 3, 2, 1. Like, really, maybe we'll get some drums. We'll really make it big. All right. Donovan Mitchell, Ja Morant, Trae Young, Brandon Ingram, Devin Booker, Karl Anthony Towns, Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum, Luka Doncic, Zion Williamson. Do you need anything repeated? Do you want anything given to you again anywhere along the way?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, I'd like you to start with 3, and for dramatic pause, I'd like you to go to 2, and then really take your time, milk it, and then give us your top overall NBA player under 25.
Got you. Okay, so number 3, I mean, I think he's dispelling the Kardashian curse. Well, maybe not, because he just had knee surgery, but he's a unicorn. If he ever gets a jump shot, any type of jump shot, a Jason Kidd type of jump shot, because Jason couldn't shoot when he got in the league, I'm going to take Ben Simmons at number 3.
All right, Ben Simmons, number 3. Agreed, he cannot shoot the basketball to save himself. But that being said, still one of the great players in the NBA. Continue. Number 3, Ben Simmons.
Okay, number 3 would be Ben Simmons. Then I think this guy is a future star. And this is tough, man, because Bubble Booker's been doing his thing. But Jason Tatum, I mean, post Kyrie Irving, has found himself. I mean, I think Jason Tatum is going to be a perennial all-star. I think he's the best player on the Boston Celtics team, and I think he is their future. I think he's going to be definitely a max guy. He's going to be a guy that's going to be in Boston for a long, long time.
And number 1, you have to go with the kid from Dallas, number 1, right?
You just messed up the tees, man. Listen, I don't understand how he does it.
Well, I didn't mess it up. I was saying I think the obvious choice is this. You could have said, no, Dave, I'm not going with Luka. But go ahead. The floor is yours.
But I just so happen to agree with you because you look at what Luka's been able to do. I mean, he's one of these guys where, you know, the toughest thing to ever do is when you look at a scouting report and you say, hey, this guy's not fast. He doesn't jump really well. He just has a feel and a knack for the game. Did you see him yesterday with the pass through the legs in front of Giannis? I mean, it's so effortless. And what happens is he understands that he's not fast, but he understands pacing. He understands timing. He understands how to take over a game. You talk about what he has, 17 triple-doubles? I mean, what are we talking about? This guy is the future star, and I think he's the guy that should be getting all the Nike commercials. Maybe not Nike because he doesn't move fast, and it seems like when you have Nikes, you're supposed to move fast. He needs some, like, New Balance because he's just stable. You know what I mean? Or maybe some Pro Walkers or something like that, man, because he is just as cool as a cucumber, and I think Luka Doncic is the biggest star under 21. I think he's going to have that Hall of Fame resume, and he's going to lead his team because he's able to facilitate and make those around him better. I think he's going to have a couple championship trophies underneath his belt before it's all said and done.
He is really unbelievable. And you look at the two-headed monster they put together there in Dallas, because Kristaps Porzingis, and let's be fair, probably wasn't going to work in New York. He didn't want to be in New York, but then he goes to Dallas, and he's really kind of transformed his game. But he and Doncic, under that ownership bar, which you can't dismiss, I mean, that duo is sensational. Now, Doncic, listen to this. He's going to finish the season as the leader in triple-doubles, making him the youngest player in NBA history to lead the league outright in triple-doubles. It's proof that he is the best player under 25. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas, gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Let me go this far. I don't think, Bart, it's even up for debate. Like, you know, a lot of these things, you throw out an answer, I throw out an answer, we can battle back and forth. To me, it's not even a conversation. If you don't choose Luka Doncic as the best player under 25 years old, you're just wrong. And I understand that.
You don't know basketball.
Right? Like, you're just flat out wrong. Like, honestly, you put Tatum 2. I don't even know if I'd have Tatum in my top 3. I think that's a worthy discussion. Ben Simmons is a very fair, you know, person to have at number 3. I think Devin Booker could be involved there. Zion Williamson, Ja Morant. But to me, it's not even a debate.
First of all, we don't know if Zion is going to eat his way out the league. We don't know if he can stay healthy. I mean, until he decides to say, hey, you know what, I'm going to be a professional, I'm going to hire a chef, I'm going to be in top condition, I can't count on him. I can't depend on him. I can't depend on potential. I need results. I need execution. I need a game plan. I need him to dare to be great. And to do that, he got to put down a po' boy.
I'll tell you what disappointed me, and I agree with you. Certainly the weight is an issue, and Mark Jackson's going to join us at 9:10 Eastern to help us break down the NBA. What disappointed me about Zion is just the way they used him. I mean, you know, you're so excited. The guy hadn't played, Bart. He hadn't played in months and months and months. You'd figure you're going to see more than 12, 15 minutes a game. I mean, really? That's what they brought him back in 15 minutes in one of his early games. I mean, really? You couldn't give me, like, down the stretch, huge moment, Zion's on the bench? I thought that was really disappointing from New Orleans.
And you don't think they want to win? You don't think they want to give him that experience? You don't think that the NBA set this whole thing up, expanded the field so that they can get Zion in, giving Ja Morant the hardest schedule, giving them the easiest schedule in the bubble? So we understand what happened is Zion didn't cooperate. Cooperate means getting in shape. It means Carmelo at 36 or however old Carmelo is, during the break decided to lose like 10 to 15 pounds. It looks like those 10 to 15 pounds that Carmelo lost, Zion gained. And you can't put him out there. You have to protect the kid from himself, and you'll take the hits and take the bumps in Alvin Gentry to protect him from himself and also protect him, his name and his brand, for what he didn't do. And he didn't take care of business. Look at how many of the All-Stars came back. And this was what the break was all about. You were going to see who was a professional and who was just a basketball player. And the professionals came back and did what professionals do. They figured out a way to maintain their conditioning, keep their body weight down. They didn't gain the COVID-15 like people are saying. They made sure that they did what was right. And you can tell when the professionals came back that they were prepared, if they came back, that they would be prepared to make a run and make sure that they're prepared to be a professional and play at a high level. Zion didn't do that. And sometimes when you're young, you don't understand how to be a professional. And I can turn it to a guy like Draymond Green, who wasn't a guy who was in tremendous shape when he came in his league, who took off like 20 pounds in the offseason. I just don't know if with this shortened season before the restart, if Zion can even lose that weight appropriately, because it's a lot harder to lose during the season than it is, you know, when you're out of season, when you can dedicate time just to shedding pounds.
Yeah, I was really, really, really disappointed the fact that we had him playing 15, 18, 20 minutes a game and not even in crunch time. All right. Bart, ESPN Radio reminding you not to forget, listen to ESPN Audio at home via your smart speaker. Check out ESPN Audio at home by telling Alexa to play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really does go. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. All right, it's Rothenberg, it's Scott with you. Lot to do. College football certainly hangs in the balance seemingly during our show today. Are we getting closer to college football redshirting the entire fall season? We'll get to that.
Hello. From the ordinary to the extraordinary. Keyshawn, J. Will, and me, Zubin Mehenti, coming August 17th to your mornings on the all-new ESPN Radio. Good morning.
Dan Orlovsky, ESPN football analyst. But before we share him with those guys, we have him with us today. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Dan, we appreciate a couple minutes. So here's the first question. We want to go NFL with you for the most part, but we're really concerned, and obvious reasons, that college football may not take place. Give us the ramifications for all things NFL, you know, combine, scouting, all that, if in fact we don't have college football this season.
Yeah, there'd be a small group of players that would be unaffected college football-wise, that these guys are going to be top five locks or top 10 locks no matter what. And then there's going to be a great amount of players who a lot of the NFL organizations don't know a ton about, haven't seen them play maybe their junior year or obviously their senior year of football, and they might be guys that We saw them as fringe draft guys that, all right, are they draftable players now? Or we saw them as maybe a third or fourth round pick. Do we like them still there? Are they really a fifth round pick? Or maybe we like them more because we didn't get to see more of their flaws. And so it would totally radically change the way that the NFL approached their offseason, their scouting aspect of things. And so, you know, As difficult as this past year was with not having private workouts and not being able to do all that stuff, this would be an even greater challenge. And so you'd probably have, you know, a draft that looked unlike anything else before, and teams would be stressed in that capacity unlike anything else before. And so obviously the respect of the disease is of greater importance than that, but it would be really difficult to invest the amount of money that those organizations invest in those players without, I mean, look at Joe Burrow. He went from a fifth round pick to the number one guy. And so without being able to see those guys for another year.
Well, you know what, Dan, you know, sometimes I listen to you and, you know, we have a lot of fun. I just had an epiphany while you were talking, man. You just planted a seed in my head. And, you know, what seems like to happen, right? You talk about the kind of byproduct of not being able to have a season is a logjam, right? And not understanding if you're going to grant a senior another year, and then the logjam also on the back of it, because now you're trying to bring students in. And what happens if we don't have high school football, or high school football is shut down because it's an outbreak? This is the perfect time, and maybe this is why he did it, because he's a lot smarter than I am. That's probably why The Rock bought the XFL, because this would be the perfect time to have a feeding league for the NFL, where some of these seniors that won't get drafted, some of these mid-major schools, some of these schools that have guys that, you know, don't want to go back to college, they've already got their degree, to give them an opportunity to be able to play high-level football with guys that are fringe football professionals, but also great college seniors that just didn't get an opportunity to show that they had the same type of growth as Joe Burrow?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously there's a lot of moving parts to that. My question would be this. If The Rock can do it, how can the NFL not? How can, you know, Power 5 college football not? Like, if we think that The Rock has the means to do it on maybe a smaller scale when it comes to, you know, 18 league or something like that,
yeah.
If we think he can do it and bubble up, how can the NFL not do it? Or how can college football not do the same thing? Because of all the logistics that he would have to jump through and the resources that he would need, college football's got that as well. And the schools and the Power 5 conferences, they have that as well. So if we're going to say that The Rock should do it, well, goodness, the SEC should as well, because they have more manpower and resources than The Rock.
Well, I'm just assuming. What I'm assuming is that, you know, next year in the springtime, we probably will have a vaccine and better therapeutics. So then you're going to have too many athletes and not enough time to be able to properly evaluate them. So you're going to need a way to get that surplus of athletes, a place where they can showcase their talent, potentially in the springtime. You know, these guys can be, you know, forego their senior season and go play maybe an 8-game season, you know, in between the NFL season, and really show the growth that they've had on the football field.
Yeah, if we're going to exclude college juniors, you know, because assuming that,
right,
let's play the hypothetical game that we don't have a season, so those juniors will be back in fall of 2021 for their senior year, and then we're excluding those members of the NFL that either play this season or they're still under contract in the NFL. There will be that pool of seniors that, you know, we didn't get to play this last year of football. And so, yeah, there's definitely something there for that if that is going to be the case. Now, again, you're going to – that pool of players is going to get picked at, because there's going to be NFL organizations that are going to look at 200 kids and go, nope, we don't want you to play in that league. Come – you're going to be a part of our draft, or we're going to put on our own combine or something like that. The NFL will not allow – you know, just sit back and allow another league to come and try and do something like that. So there's a group of players that is going to get pulled away. And then there's a group of players that are going to be seniors this year that, you know, again, the NFL is going to look at it and go, no, you were an okay player as a senior on your college football team that wasn't very good. There is no future for you in the NFL. And the reality is that's the great majority of the college football players. And so, you know, there's definitely something there. I could see the NFL trying to go, no, we're going to put on our own combine, our own spring developmental, you know, clinic that would restrict that. But there's something there. You're right. There's something, some kind of window there.
Dan Orlovsky joining us here, ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Rothenberg and Scott with you on ESPN Radio. All right, let's look to the NFL a little bit, Dan. So we're 4.5 weeks away from the start of the season. We're going to have no preseason. We're going to have, what, I think 14 practices in total. I know we love the NFL, but do you think we're going to see a little bit lesser version than we normally see, or do you think we're going to see a well-watered-down version of what we normally see when the season starts?
Nah, we'll see good football. When the season starts, obviously there's going to be some, you know, we're playing football again. You know, guys will catch up to speed and they'll catch up to the physicality and the mistakes will, as the season goes on for most teams, go down. The penalties as the season goes on for most teams will go down. So the first month will certainly be, I guess, maybe a little bit rougher around the edges. But listen, these guys are the best of the best of 7+ billion people on the planet. You know, like they're going to catch on and catch on quickly. We'll see good football. There's also the case that you can make that this will be the freshest these players in the NFL have ever been. And, you know, when I was with the Colts, I remember Bill Polian mandating a thing within their organization because the Colts were so accustomed to playing deep into the beginning part of the calendar year, deep into January and February, that he would mandate per how many snaps you played that season dictated how long you needed for your offseason. And he wanted to push your offseason for players. He wanted, if you played, you know, X amount of snaps, you were not allowed to start your offseason training till April 18th or something like that, or, you know, May 7th. And so his whole concept was making sure that you were fresh for the following season. And so we've seen an offseason where these guys have had probably the least amount of physical demand on their bodies. These guys have trained super hard, but least amount of physical demand. So we might see the freshest group of players that we've seen in a long, long, long time. And so there might be some, you know, mechanical aspects of football that you know, might be sloppy for the first week or two. But we also could see a ton of speed on the field and freshness body-wise that we haven't seen in a long time.
I'm glad you said that, Dan, because, you know, I was part of some of those load management, you know, early in the days, the 30 and over club and all those things, you know, with some of the teams I was on. But the byproduct of that is, you know, that's great for teams that have been together with each other and they understand really what winning's all about there in their window. But what about all these new coaches that are trying to establish a culture, that's trying to establish a way to play, you know, trying to establish where to tell the guys to go, where they're supposed to be, how meetings in that day is going to be structured? Because every team does things slightly different, whether you have that walkthrough before practice or after, and, you know, meeting times and things of that sort. Those teams are going to be at a disadvantage. And I would say it's going to be hard to have one of those up and coming teams because they, you know, if you have a new coach, it's going to be hard to have that 1 year success. Like when Rex went to the Jets and we went to the AFC Championship, you're going to have a whole, it's going to be pretty much the usual suspects, I think, as far as being able to be right back where they need to be. I know we always talk about these new teams and teams, you know, entering the playoffs that didn't make the playoffs the year before, but I think this year is going to be harder than any other year with people trying to establish new offense and defensive systems.
No, I totally agree that these teams that are established with, and it's really this, head coach and quarterback. And I know, you know, we give too much credit and all that, but like they often set the tone for most organizations of how things are going to go. And the urgency that the head coach and the quarterback display and the discipline that those guys display will help some of those newer teams try to catch up to some of the teams that are established. Like the New Orleans Saints, you know, Sean Payton and Drew have 14 years together. You know, Tom Brady and Bruce Arians have zero. But Tom Brady's got a maniacal sense of urgency and focus. And so the quicker, and that's why I made this point. Everyone says, well, how quickly is Tom Brady going to adjust in Tampa Bay? I look at it totally different. How quickly is Tampa Bay going to adjust to Tom Brady? Because Tom Brady is going to bring just a psychotic level of focus and urgency to Tampa Bay, unlike anything those players have ever experienced. And so how quickly can they get up to speed with Tom Brady on a daily basis? Because, Bart, you know this. Once you get into camp, the 7th, 8th, 9th day of camp, they stink. I mean, they're brutal. Now you're going to have someone, the quarterback, breathing down your neck every single second of the day, like demanding every single second of the day. How quickly can you adjust to that? The same in Dallas, you know, with Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy. How quickly does Mike McCarthy get adjusted to things in Dallas, and how quickly does Dak get adjusted to Mike McCarthy? That's a huge, you know, because if you look at both those situations, Philadelphia's got Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz. Can they almost get out to an insurmountable lead by the middle of October while Dak and Mike McCarthy somewhat get adjusted? And the same with New Orleans and Tampa Bay. Can Tampa Bay just keep New Orleans in striking distance early on as they're going through their adjustments to make November and December, you know, can they go catch that first place team, so to speak, as they've gotten adjusted to the NFL season?
No, I know we only have limited time with you, but I want to ask you about the Washington, because I feel like this is like watching a horror movie. You know, you look at, you know, Riverboat Ron, he comes in, they have to have the whole naming scandal, right? Okay, how are we going to change the team name? He has to deal with that, get out front. Now you have Geis who he has to release, who they were depending on when healthy, was showing that he was a top-notch premium type of player. Now he's gone. What type of boat is, well, you know, what type of situation, what type of job is Ron Rivera doing, and what kind of job is he going to have to do to try and establish a culture in a team that seems to be, you know, been a ship that didn't have a captain?
Yeah, this is a tall order for Ron Rivera. And the great thing is, anyone who's paid attention to him, first of all, he has the leadership capabilities and the character to get them out of what they're in and into where they want to go. And I'll use this analogy. A lot of times, you know, when we talk football and a player switches organizations, we'll go, you know, how long is it going to take him to learn their new terminology when it comes to the scheme? And I have always said, before you learn the new terminology, you have to forget the old terminology. And so what Ron Rivera has to do in Washington is he has to make sure that everybody associated with that organization forgets the way things have done in the past. We are going to get rid of all those habits that we had in the past. Listen, this is front office to, you know, departments, the marketing department and the PR department, and then onto the field. We're going to forget all the stuff we did in the past because it was a bunch of junk. And then we will start to relearn the right way to do things top down. And so this is the proverbial, this is going to take some time. And, you know, the great thing is, I'm hoping that owners and general managers look at this season and go, wait, we've got to give everybody somewhat of a pass because the challenges that this season are going to present. So, like, when people ask me, what do you think is going to happen with Dwayne Haskins? He's got to prove he's a franchise quarterback this year. Really? He needs to prove this year that he's the franchise in Washington for the future. He's got a new head coach, an absolutely atrocious situation where he is, and the team around him stinks. Now, so we expect Dwayne Haskins to prove to everybody that he's the franchise quarterback. He's got no shot. And so patience will be so key. You've got to be impatiently patient because you got to be very demanding if you're Ron Rivera, but also understand that it's going to take time. But they need to forget all the stuff that they were a part of in the past and then start to move on and relearn the right way to do things. This is a 2022-2023 thing rather than seeing what they are right this season.
Dan, we could talk to you for hours. We didn't talk Giants, Jets, Jadeveon Clowney, all those guys, but unfortunately we have to run. Have a good day, and hopefully we'll talk to you real soon, buddy.
Appreciate you guys. Be well.
Your mornings are about to become unfiltered.
Don't try to manipulate me because you're not going to win in that situation.
G-Sean, Jay Will, and Zubin. Mornings, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.
All right, one of my favorites. I mean, former St. John star, Knicks star, pains me to say Pacer star as well, and of course the head coach of the Golden State Warriors for a time, Mark Jackson, joins us here on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mark, we appreciate a couple minutes. Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott here on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for having me. You guys do an awesome job.
Well, we appreciate it. All right, I got to ask you this, because I was really disappointed by this in the bubble. It kind of felt to me, and Bart and I had this discussion earlier, we both agreed, that this was kind of Zion built towards him. They wanted to give him a chance to play in the postseason, to shine on the biggest stage, to have this 8-9 battle. I was really disappointed, and I want to know your opinion on it, in the way that he was used. Like, 15 minutes a night, like I was very underwhelmed in the bubble version of Zion Williamson.
I agree with you, but I understand from an organizational standpoint, you know, sitting and talking or having discussions with the head guy in New Orleans and David Griffin, they were attempting to protect their future and to make sure that he was physically in position to have a long, incredible career. And they stuck to the plan. Now, it's frustrating from his standpoint. It's frustrating as a coach. And people don't even understand how frustrating it is as teammates when we're trying to fight for our playoff lives, not having, you know, one of our best players, if not our best player, on the floor. That can drain you. But to me, more frustrating was their energy and effort, the inconsistency in fighting for the playoffs and battling night in and night out, individually and collectively.
How much of that responsibility falls on Zion? Because it didn't seem like he took the time off to get in tremendous shape. We saw Carmelo come back and look like a totally different person. You know, we saw LeBron as expected. Is that the next step that Zion has to take? It's the dedication to understanding that he's a pro, and it may be he may not be able to have the jelly donut. Or he may not be able to have. He may have to be on a strict diet, but that's what professionals do.
Yeah, he's got to embrace the battle, and he's got to embrace the conditioning and make sure that he comes back stronger, lighter, the best. There's people that say, well, is the muscle mass and all of that, and his body. I remember my younger brother. He said, well, he can only get to be so small because he has so much muscle. Well, whatever the case is, they need to make sure him and the organization that he comes back the lightest possibly he can be, to put him in position to sustain, have sustained health and sustained success.
Now, you know, one of the byproducts of the bubble is, you know, we got Bubble Booker right now, and we got Bubble Carmelo, and it seems like it's shaping out for like a hell of a race for that last eighth spot. Are we underestimating potentially Portland, what they can do? And we think it's a foregone conclusion that they're going to lose to the Lakers. But, you know, is this the best matchup potentially entertainment value-wise for a 8-1 matchup?
Well, it is because of, you know, you look at that Portland team. Last year they were in the Western Conference Finals. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the Lakers automatically beat them, especially this Laker team right now, you know, missing a playmaker, missing another guy that can initiate and take over the offense. With Anthony Davis, the ability to double-team him or keep him away from the paint, even as great as LeBron James is, in a playoff matchup, I can game plan to the point where I can try to minimize the damage that he can do on his terms, as opposed to I can give him the jump shot. I can give him a fadeaway turnaround jump shot on the block. I can keep him away from the rim and force him to make and take tough shots. It gives me a better chance. One thing you know about that Portland team, they have two guys in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum who can go get a basket, initiating you on their own. And then they have a guy that's a future Hall of Famer in Carmelo Anthony that has proven that he should have been in the league when no one would sign him. He's a guy that has helped that team. And the thing I don't like is everybody said, oh, well, he's a cancer and he's selfish. The guy in Portland has been a tremendous leader, has embraced his role, and been an ultimate pro, and doesn't get enough credit. And sometimes we have to look at the culture that he's been around as opposed to the individual that he is.
Mark Jackson joining Dave Rothenberg and Bart Scott here on ESPN Radio. So we were all disappointed, you included, Mark, in Zion Williamson and just his lack of production and lack of minutes that we got to see from him. But my God, since we've restarted in the bubble, we've had some, Mark, some unbelievable performances. Luka Doncic has seemingly taken his game to another level. TJ Warren is a player that most people never heard of who's been sensational. Devin Booker and the Suns are rolling along, and he looks ungodly right now. I mean, despite some disappointments from some, we have gotten a treat of watching guys at a very high level so far.
We've watched some great basketball individually and collectively, and it's been fun to watch. You know, you pointed out a guy like TJ Warren who was traded for cash consideration. Think about that, cash consideration. Just imagine if he was on the Phoenix Suns right now, healthy and whole, and helping that team towards their playoff march. So I'm happy for him and happy that he's having the success that he's had, as he's having. You look at Devin Booker, and there's no surprise. This guy has been special for a long time. The difference now is that they're winning in the bubble. So now we can celebrate his success and equate it to team success also. And then you look at Luka. To me, I said it on the air, he's a combination, with all due respect, of Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. He's the perfect, if you mix both of those guys, you'd find, you know, Luka Doncic. He's a guy that's young, but he's old, because he's played at such a young age and played professional ball and has been a great player for a long time, and he's not afraid of the bright lights. He is a special, special talent.
Now, I wanted to go back to Dame Lillard because he got into it with Patrick Beverley and Paul George, and you know they had their little Twitter rant. But should we maybe listen to the words a little bit of what Dame is doing, and should we have a greater level of respect because he's deciding not to go join another, you know, superstar? He's trying to get stars to come to him and do it with the team that brought him in the league.
Well, he's an old school mentality, and that's with all due respect again to this new generation. But he's a guy that, you know, is a no nonsense guy. He's a leader. He's a guy that's not going to look for the easy way out. He's a true professional that's had incredible success. And you think about doing it in Portland. He is the franchise guy in Portland. Everybody is well aware of it. And I like the way they took it back. It's okay to trash talk, whether it's on the court, off the court, on Twitter, on Instagram, it doesn't matter. I don't like when the families get involved in it, but when those guys are talking and having fun with it, believe that their relationships are loaded with love and respect across the board. But it's good to not see guys hugging and kissing at the end of games.
Let me ask you this, Mark, and you know, it's certainly a question a lot of people have on their minds when it comes to you. And the Knicks job was open. There was a lot of talk. Will Mark Jackson, you know, be involved? Is there a chance that he's going to get this job? I'm going to just come out and ask you point blank: do you want to coach in the NBA again?
I look forward to the day that I coach again in this league. I had the time of my life coaching in Golden State, build relationships that'll last a lifetime. Had an opportunity to be part of great success when you think about a team that made the playoffs one time in the previous 20 years. To think where they are today, a lot of credit goes across the board to those players, that organization, and it was a lot of fun for me. So I truly look forward to the day when I coach again in this league, and the opportunity will come.
Who do you got for the MVP?
It's a tough choice. You know, to me, the top three guys certainly are the ones that was the finalists, and Giannis, LeBron, and James Harden. We take James Harden for granted and what he's been able to do since he stepped foot in Houston. An incredible basketball player that's as good as it gets from a scorer's mentality. You have to game plan, and you can't live with the damage that he does offensively. You have to send two guys to him and get the ball out of his hands. But I think it came down to two guys, and you can't go wrong either way. It's either Giannis or LeBron with James Harden a close third.
All right, so Mark, let me ask you this. Bart, we had this conversation before. Top three players in the NBA under the age of 25, and you know all of them. So Giannis is not included because he's not under 25, but it's Doncic, it's Moran, it's Tatum, it's Booker, it's Donovan Mitchell.
Trae Young.
The list is long and storied, certainly. Bart, give him your list of 3-1, and then let's let Mark give us his list.
All right, well, my list was Ben Simmons at 3, Jason Tatum at 2, and Luka at 1.
Okay, and who else do I have? This is off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, you got Devin Booker.
Yep, Donovan Mitchell.
You got Zion, you got Ja, you got Trae Young.
Okay, my number one. Let's go. You want my number one first?
I'd like 3. I like the suspense to be built up. I'd like 3-1.
Okay.
If you could.
Three would be Devin Booker. Two would be, and this again is off the top of my head, yeah, Jason Tatum.
Wow, okay.
Is Ben Simmons under that age? No,
he
right?
Yeah, he is.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Let's start that again.
You just left Magic and Bird off.
Three would be Jason Tatum. Two would be, oh, my goodness, Ben Simmons. And one would be Luka.
Wow.
And Devin Booker is tough to leave off the board. I love scoring.
You know what we figured out? The NBA is in very good hands moving forward, aren't they?
You think about it. These guys flat out have incredible talent, and the game is extremely exciting to watch. It is in great hands, and I think for a long time to come.
Well, listen, we appreciate a couple minutes. Thanks for playing our game with us. Thanks for giving us some insight on the NBA, and Mark, we'll talk to you hopefully real soon.
And I personally look forward to you coaching one of these tremendous talents under 21.
Can't wait. Thanks so much.
Very well played. Thanks, Mark. We appreciate
Stay
it.
Safe.
It's time to rise and grind.
Whether it's in practice, a scrimmage, or a game, I'm trying to hurt your feelings.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, coming August 17th to the all-new ESPN Radio.